Welcome to Behind the Bite, where we delve deep into the real life struggles and triumphs surrounding food, body, and weight. I'm Dr. Christina Castanini, a psychologist and certified eating disorder specialist, bringing you a unique blend of personal experience as a recovered individual with over 25 years of professional expertise. In each episode, we'll share the courageous journeys of individuals who have faced these challenges firsthand, alongside insights from dedicated professionals in the field. Whether you're seeking healing, inspiration, or simply a deeper understanding, this podcast is here to empower you on your own path to a better life. Join us as we explore stories of resilience, discuss the latest insights, and strive to foster a community of support and growth. Together, we can break down barriers, challenge stigma, and pave the way towards healing and living authentically. You know that feeling when you're doing something and it seems like it's all in the name of health or control or perfection, but deep down it's driven by fear? Yeah, me too. And today's episode is one I wish I had listened to when I was in the thick of my own eating disorder. Because let's be honest, we don't talk nearly enough about the overlap between eating disorders and OCD, and how they can quietly, powerfully, and painfully reinforce each other. I'm joined by Allison Ford, a brilliant therapist who not only specializes in both eating disorders and OCD, but has also lived through them. Her insights are grounded in clinical expertise, but also raw, real experience. And in this conversation today, we're going to get into it all, from childhood, quote unquote, safety rituals that seemed cute on the outside to compulsive food rules that steal the joy and connection to the way intrusive thoughts can hijack your day and really your life. We're also going to talk about medication. Yes, we're going to go there. Self-trust, cultural messages, and how recovery isn't about silencing the noise, but changing how you respond to it. And if you've ever wondered, is what I'm doing just healthy, or is it something more? This episode might be the light bulb moment you didn't know you needed. So let's get into it. All right, Allison, welcome. Really appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Christina.
All right. So with every guest, I always like to know a little bit about like how you got to this place in your career and your life. And is there anything you feel like was like a turning point for you to get you working with eating disorders?
Yeah, really, it came from my own personal lived experience. When I was a teenager, late teens, I started getting really into like what I thought was like health and wellness. Looking back, it was really more like orthorexia, and I was very obsessive with it, very compulsive with it, and it just spiraled out of control until I had like full-blown anorexia for several years before I was able to find a place of stability and recovery. And that took a lot of trial and error with different therapists, dietitians, doctors. But once I found a team that really worked for me, I was able to make a really solid recovery, which I'm really grateful for. I would not wish that upon anyone. It's really hard way to live, really keeps your world very small and so disconnected. I just remember feeling really detached from everything all the time, which is really the point on some level, right? Is like it's a protective factor against really intense emotions, sometimes trauma. And that was certainly my case as well. Then later on, I just started noticing I had these really like perfectionistic tendencies, which is very common with eating disorders, and just different ways that my obsessive behavior would manifest. Till it got so bad that I realized I think I have OCD. And I have a lot of privilege in that, like I'm really well informed of mental health stuff. So I knew what was happening when it was happening. So then I went through treatment for OCD. And realized how much the two are so alike, both eating disorders and OCD. And I felt like upset that my eating disorder therapist didn't realize I had OCD or didn't tell me or talk to me about it. And so that sent me as a therapist down a road of really wanting to make sure I'm bringing in this intersection to the field of eating disorders, because I feel like had I been screened for OCD a lot sooner, it would have helped my recovery, but also helped just prevent future suffering. So I feel really passionate about that. And as I've gotten to really work through this intersection with clients and research, I I've also noticed that some of the most terminal cases of eating disorders have both eating disorders and OCD. And so I feel like it's just really important that we are looking at that so we can prevent those more terminal cases of eating disorders, because obviously we don't want anyone to lose their life from these things. I feel really passionate about it and work with clients that have one or both and commonly do speaking events like this or just different conferences and things like that. So yeah, it really was born out of my own personal experience.
Thank you for that. And I really appreciate that, because there is this intersection with OCD and eating disorders that I think we don't talk about enough. And so for anyone listening, could you help explain how you came to that realization that there is OCD components to eating disorders? Because I think maybe somebody's listening going, wait a minute, how do I know if I have OCD or an eating disorder, or if my therapist if you're in treatment, should be addressing the OCD as alongside the eating disorder? Or what do you say about any of those questions?
Yeah, so really important question. I will just briefly overview that. So OCD is a pattern of intrusive thoughts. Those are the obsessions. I don't like the word obsession because it makes it sound like something you enjoy, but they're not things you enjoy. They're really intrusive and unwanted and distressing thoughts. Things like, could I accidentally harm my baby? Or what if I'm a pedophile? Or what if this food is contaminated? Or what if I'm with the wrong partner and I'll never know and be miserable forever? It can attack all these different areas of your life. And then there's subsequent compulsions or safety behaviors done to reduce the anxiety that those intrusive thoughts bring. And with eating disorders, we do see that pattern of intrusive thoughts and compulsions as well. However, it's more directed at food and the body versus more global of the person's life. So I would say that if anyone listening notices they have some of these intrusive thoughts and compulsions in other areas of life too, it would be worth getting assessed, because a lot of times there's sort of signs of OCD earlier in life. People do get diagnosed later and can have their first kind of bout of OCD later in life. But a lot of people can look back and see, oh yeah, that thing I did in childhood wasn't quite normal. And I think another reason why it goes so misdiagnosed is there's so much misconception about what OCD is. People think it's hand washing and love of cleaning or organizing, but compulsions can be completely mental. They can be ruminating about thoughts, trying to think good thoughts and erase the bad thoughts. They can be happening totally internally, so you won't necessarily see someone doing compulsions. So yeah, as therapists, it's really important to screen for those things. And for any clients or people in recovery listening, just knowing that if you have this pattern of intrusive what-if thoughts and all these sort of compulsions you have to do to try to make those thoughts go away, that's a really good indicator that you might be working with OCD too.
Yeah, just as you were talking, I was just thinking about, even for myself, back when I was struggling, it was I had to do a certain number of minutes of exercise or else this really bad thing would happen. Or I know a lot of my patients struggle with counting a certain number of calories or a certain number of macros, or just following these very strict regimens and routines and self-induced rules that honestly make no sense to anybody else but themselves, right? And they really Yes. need to follow them, and their whole day revolves around following these things, to the point where if they don't, they're just on edge and anxious. And I'm just wondering, for yourself, do you remember back some of the things that you were like that with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of my kind of pervasive OCD themes throughout life has been harm OCD. This fear that I would something horrible would happen to a family member or a loved one, or even worse was I would cause that. So I can remember my first experience with harm OCD. I must have been 7 or 8, I don't know my exact age, but my mom was traveling for a lot of work business trips at the time. And I used to be really scared of her flying and getting into a car accident. And so I would write these really elaborate, what I called be safe notes. And basically it would be I hope you fly safe. I hope the plane is safe. And my mom just thought it was cute, but I had to write everything in a certain way. I had to fold it a certain way, and I would have to make sure to tell her to read it at a certain time the flight was taking off. And I didn't realize that was OCD, but yeah, looking back now knowing what OCD is, I'm like, oh my gosh, I remember being so scared and feeling like if she didn't follow those directions, if I didn't write things correctly, that some horrible accident would happen to her, she would die, it would be my fault, and like I would be alone. Yeah, I can now look back and realize that was definitely very anxiety ridden and obsessive and compulsive. But yeah, I had no idea. It was all happening mentally. So and there was physical compulsions of me writing out the stuff. But a lot of times you don't see the like intensity or the ritualistic behavior behind the compulsion. So my mom, she's just like getting these notes about from her daughter about flying safe. She just, again, thought they were just like cute. But inside I was really like actually terrified of it. And from there, I started getting really afraid of like natural disasters. And so really worried that some kind of earthquake or mountain blowing up, we used to live by Mount Rainier, would take out my family. So I would make them all get ready go bags so that if something horrible happened, we all had a safety bag. And then I would like recite to them the instructions of, this is where you go, this is who you call, this is where you wait for us. It was just really intense. Like I was really afraid of something bad happening out of my control and losing my loved ones, really.
So I'm just curious, when you did those things, did that help you feel like, okay, I controlled the situation, now I can breathe and calm down and relax? Or did it like only temporarily do that for you?
Yeah, really good point. So it would temporarily relieve the anxiety, but just like with all compulsions, it tends to only grow because when you're doing a compulsion, you're basically sending the message to your brain that the intrusive thought is a real threat and it's something you need to keep paying attention to. So your brain then scans for more of those threats and the fear becomes even bigger. So yeah, it temporarily reduced the anxiety, but in the long run would amp it up. And we see the same with eating disorders, right? Like temporarily following the exercise rule, right, helps you feel more grounded and calm. But then the next time you go to exercise, you probably now have to do, like the rules changed a little bit. Now you have to do more of that thing to achieve the same feeling. And then it just becomes this vicious cycle of the rituals get more intense over time. And then in the long run, the fear doesn't really go away.
And looking at what is the real fear? What are you actually worried about? And I don't know if you were ever able to get to that point, or is that why you were upset that it didn't come up in therapy for you?
Yeah, looking back, I can see through a lot of the themes I've had, it's this fear of losing my loved ones and being like alone in the world. And even when I think of my eating disorder, so much of it was about like feeling like it helped me belong or be accepted. So really a lot of fears of being alone. And I had early experiences with loss and things like that that I think played into that and made me vulnerable to fearing those things. But yeah, there's typically a core fear behind behind OCD intrusive thoughts as well as eating disorder ones. So some common ones are the aloneness or this fear that you're this like evil person, everyone's going to find out, or this fear that like you are unlovable and a lot of them come back to being alone. But yeah, there's core fears underneath the ways that they're presenting on the surface.
Yeah, it's interesting. I always find like this, a common one is I'm not good enough. And so almost like, if I look perfect on the outside by doing all these things, or if I look on the scale and the number goes down, like it's validation that everything I'm doing is like helping me feel in control of that. Look, I am good enough because all the things I'm doing is like making that number go down. Or I think, you know, what happens is if the number goes up, what to your point, you have to do more.
Yes. And like, I think something that is different with eating disorders is that obviously our culture rewards that thinness too. So the culture is also compounding on that fear, which makes it so hard to unravel from or even have the motivation to unravel from, because it's, yeah, when you're being rewarded and praised by people in your life for achieving a closer body size that is the quote unquote like ideal size, it's hard to give that up. Because like you said, like sometimes that comes up in people's lives when that's like all they feel like they're worth or all they feel that they're like good at. So it's a lot to detach from. Whereas I think OCD, a lot of the times, it's more ego dystonic. People do not want to feel, don't feel congruent with the things OCD makes them do or think or feel. And that way, there tends to be a little bit more motivation for recovery. But yeah, it's just a side tangent.
Yeah, and I'm wondering too, how much time did it take out of your day to think about all these things or to do all these behaviors? I'm just curious, did you feel like it was just taking up so much of your time and you were not having time for other things?
Yeah, at the worst of it, it felt like it was taking up like 90% of my waking moment. And looking back with the eating disorder, that was pretty similar. Although again, because they were like thoughts that were encouraged by society, it felt less distressing. Although obviously it was hugely impacting my life. But I guess the level at which like the harm OCD stuff made me feel like panicked, right? Whereas the eating disorder thoughts, I just thought I was doing what I'm supposed to.
So if anyone's listening and they're saying, how do I know if like I have this or if what I'm doing is quote unquote healthy or normal, could you help maybe listeners understand, okay, you've crossed the line over into maybe having OCD with your eating disorder?
Yes. So if you are noticing yourself, wow, I'm struggling with some of these intrusive thought patterns, diagnostically, if it's taking up over an hour of your day and it's lasted for a couple months, you meet requirements for OCD. And I always tell people, like, don't wait until it's taking up that long and taking up that long for many months. Any amount of intrusive thoughts that's interrupting your day-to-day life is enough to go get help for. Because just like eating disorders, that early intervention is really key.
So how does somebody know what's an intrusive thought versus what isn't? Because if they're doing that, it just probably seems like normal to them.
Yes. So an intrusive thought, it usually starts with a what if. Oh no, what if something bad happens to X, Y, and Z? Or what if this food is contaminated? Or it can also show up as a command though too. It can show up like a, if you don't do this, it's going to happen. And the key that also sets it apart is that it's an unwanted thought. You don't want to be thinking that thought. That's why for eating disorders, it can be harder to tease out because it feels more wanted, at least certain eating disorder behaviors. But with OCD, all the time, I've never had a client enjoy their OCD thoughts. So they will be thoughts that are really distressing and disturbing to you. You might also feel really embarrassed and ashamed of them because they can also be really taboo, like sexual intrusive thoughts. Like I said earlier, like the fear of becoming a pedophile is a really common one. And people usually don't seek help for it because they're afraid if they were to say that to even a therapist that they would be reported or something like that. Those thoughts are the like opposite of what you actually want and actually value. So yeah, if you have any patterns of really just distressing or disturbing thoughts that you don't want to be thinking about but feel like you can't control, those are a sign that it's more intrusive.
Yeah, I'm with you. I hear that all the time. People are like, oh my gosh, I have these thoughts of doing this horrible thing to somebody or like hurting myself or jumping off a cliff. Just things that they're like, why would I ever think these things? Does that mean I'm going to do it? And I think that's the fear is like, if I'm thinking it, does that mean I'm capable and or I'm actually going to do it? So I don't know if you find that too.
Yeah. Yeah. We call that thought action fusion. So this really common sort of distortion that happens where you think just because you think it means you're going to do it. Whereas in reality, like as humans, we have so many thoughts that we never actually act on. And between like thought and action comes in like intention, desire, motivation, like your character, all of your values. And that's what we try to, when we work with OCD and finding recovery, we try to come back to those values, like, and trusting yourself versus thinking like your thoughts are running the show or that you can't trust yourself.
So people going, okay, so I have these thoughts, this is happening, it's running a lot of my life. Oh my gosh, like how do these stop or how do I even get help for this? Because to be honest, it's not like you snap your fingers and these go away, or even listening to this podcast and be like, oh, now I understand it, it's going to stop.
No, yeah, it definitely takes time. And probably the thing that my clients hate hearing the most is that the goal isn't to make the thoughts stop. We can't control the thoughts. You can't control any thought that pops into your head. And the more you try to suppress it, usually it just gets louder. If I tell you, like, don't think of a white elephant, you're going to think of that white elephant, right? And the goal of recovery is actually more, let's learn to accept those thoughts and allow them to be there without getting so wrapped up in them. And being able to live our lives despite the thoughts, just treating them like they're any other thought. Oh, I need to go feed my dog. That doesn't trigger anxiety. And we want to build a different relationship with those intrusive thoughts that is more neutral and doesn't mean you like them. It just means you accept them and you're not doing anything about them. So yeah, it's really more about changing your relationship to the thoughts than making them go away.
Yeah, I like that you said that because it's true. I think the problem is, or I think why they're so alarming is because they're so out of the norm. To your point, let me go feed my dog. Let me go get my oil changed. These are thoughts that just come and go, and they're not like distressing or, whoa, what am I thinking? Like, where's that coming from?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And like the brain is wild and everyone gets intrusive thoughts, even people without OCD. It's just that people with OCD have a really overactive fear center of the brain and they have one of those thoughts and all of a sudden this anxiety response happens. And that's what makes it feel like you have to do something about it, right? But someone without OCD will have an intrusive thought and be like, oh, that was kind of weird, whatever. And in recovery, that's the goal. We want to get to reacting to those thoughts the way someone without OCD would.
Just even as you were talking, thinking, gosh, just so much of it is about control. We say that a lot with eating disorders, right? It's like trying to control this outcome that you're fearing.
Yes.
Or trying to control something, whether it's a feeling, emotion, what have you, the bad thing from happening.
They're both great distractors. When you think of like why someone would need to feel so much control or certainty, typically, and not everyone, but a lot of people with eating disorders or OCD have some kind of trauma or pain or something going on that feels so out of their control in a very negative way. So to have something that can you feel like can give you a sense of certainty and security feels really distracting from that pain in a way that's like maybe more survivable than the pain itself. So I hope that makes sense that I'm saying what I'm saying, but I think they can both be protective in that way that these numb the other stuff going on with us.
Yeah, because it sounds just your example, right? If you're so worried that something bad's going to happen to your mom when she's on a trip, your mind is so occupied, like writing these notes and being so diligent about the timing of things. Your mind has no space there to think about, oh my gosh, what if something bad happens, or feeling the fear. Everything's so focused on this other thing that you're doing to counteract that. So that totally makes sense.
Definitely, yeah. Like the feeling of the fear of loss or whatever, that was too much to sit with. So OCD helped me channel that into an action and stay distracted from the fear. But the problem is that's only very temporary, just like with eating disorders.
Right. And if people are listening and they're like, gosh, like maybe they've heard of like the checking or the counting is the traditional like OCD, like people counting like the number of times they take steps or they have a magic number. I have to check the locks 15 times or whatever it is. That too is okay. If I check the locks 15 times before bed, like nothing bad's going to happen during the night. But the problem is like maybe they're up in bed and they can't fall asleep and they're like, wait, did I only do it 14 times? Maybe I better go do it again. It's like it can take a lot of time because I mean, they're thinking maybe I didn't do it right. But it's really not about the locks at all or the number 15.
No, yes. For sure. And that's a really good point, too, is that they call OCD like the doubting disorder, because no matter how many compulsions you do, there's still doubt. There's still a what if. So, yeah, you check the locks 3 times, but OCD is going to convince you one way or the other that you need to go check it again. And so that's a good way to differentiate. Maybe I'm just like anxious about the locks, or is it OCD? If you're doing compulsions and it's not going away, it's still popping up, that's another really good indicator that might be dealing more with OCD, because it tends to just lead to more doubt. Same with if you think about eating disorders and body image stuff, like body checking tends to lead to more body checking, right? And more feelings of negative body image, because like your brain is staying so hyper aware of this possible threat that it feels real even when it's not.
Right. Like you could look in the mirror and be like, okay, that meal I just ate didn't do anything quote unquote bad. But then an hour later, wait a minute, maybe I better check again. Like maybe whatever happens in your mind, right? It wasn't like, maybe I didn't see it real. Maybe whatever. To your point, like however you body check. Oh, maybe I need to go check the scale instead of the, like how many times do people weigh themselves in a day? What is that about? What information are they going to get like from the morning to the night that like is going to do anything that's going to help them feel better?
Yes, it's really in both of these cases points to like a major distrust of the self. I always talk a lot with my clients about rebuilding that self-trust as a foundation to really long-term healing.
So do you ever get questioned about what's the difference between OCD and obsessive compulsive personality disorder?
Yeah, I do get that question. To be honest, I'm not a specialist in OCPD, but the OCPD, is more about the person's personality throughout their entire lifespan. And it tends to be a lot more like rigidity and inflexibility in the way they do day-to-day life and the way they are in relationships versus OCD is something that kind of like pops, it kind of waxes and wanes throughout the lifespan. And it's not like a core part of the person's who they are and personality. And I'm probably not explaining that the best because, again, I'm not an expert in OCPD, but the two are actually really not similar. So I think there's a lot of misconception about that.
Yeah, I just brought it up because I do hear people say that a lot. Oh, I know they say it in passing. Oh, I'm so OCD. Or they say these things and I think sometimes clearing it up a little bit because they are very different.
Yeah, definitely different.
So if anyone is out there and they're saying, okay, I would really like to get help for this, do you advocate for them to find a specialist that works with both disorders? Or what would you like? What direction would you guide them in?
Yeah, absolutely. If someone is struggling with both, I would recommend trying to find someone who specializes in both. That can be tricky. So if that's not possible, thinking about which one is more intense for you and starting with that, or which one is like causing the most like immediate like harm or risk to your life, right? Because they could both be really intense, but if you are in a really malnourished state, then doing really intense OCD work is probably not going to feel very accessible. Trying to look at all angles, like getting a medical evaluation, getting assessed by a specialist, and just seeing what your options are. But yeah, best case is definitely to find someone who does both.
And do you often refer to a psychiatrist for medication? Do you find that's also helpful?
Yeah, I am a big advocate for medication. SSRIs are the go-to for OCD and they can be very effective. They were for me and I mean, I still take them to manage OCD and I think like treatment was like 50% of the recovery and honestly the medication was the other 50%. And not to say everyone has to take medication to get better, but it really is such a helpful tool. So definitely getting assessed by a psychiatrist can be helpful if the person's open to it. A lot of clients, though, want to try therapy first. There tends to be a lot of anxiety about medication, which makes me sad because it is such a helpful tool. But I get it. It's hard to, there's so much stigma with mental health medications. And that's why I try to be so open about it. I'm like, no, it's okay. I'm a therapist and I take them and benefit from them. So hope that helps anyone feel less ashamed of thinking about medication.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up because I think too, like I'm very open about it and I understand people maybe have ideas about it that scare them or they're hesitant for whatever reason. But I do think sometimes we forget to talk about, we are biological beings as well. And there can be a component to this that it can really assist with the intrusive thoughts in a way that maybe just getting the relief.
Yes. Yeah. And personally, it helped me relieve a little bit of the symptoms so that I could actually engage in the therapy. Because when you are in a constant state of fight or flight, it's hard to then do a therapy that actually is going to trigger you more because OCD therapy requires you to face some of those fears and not do the compulsions. So it does tend to temporarily increase your anxiety. So for me, I had to have a little bit of relief so I could even do the treatment. And so that's just something for people to think about as well. And I always tell people, you could try a medication. you don't have to stick with it, but you won't know how helpful it can be unless you try it.
Yeah, I think people are also worried, like, oh gosh, once I start, I have to be on it for the rest of my life. And maybe they even heard you saying, oh gosh, you still take it. That's my biggest fear. And so yeah. I don't know, do you have conversations with people about that too?
Yeah, I think a lot of that fear, and I had those fears too, but a lot of that is very rooted in some, right? This idea that we like shouldn't need medication or shouldn't need things to help with our health or our body. This idea that we should just like not need help. So I like to highlight that a little bit because I think unpacking where is this feeling that like you're not supposed to need help from anything coming from, or that your body is supposed to be like functioning at 100% all the time. And I'm including the brain in that. But the other thing is like really looking at like the research, the clinical education around these medications. They're not addictive. They don't build up tolerance and withdrawal the way that like addictive substances do. And there's ways to very safely get off of them if and when you want to. The only reason I don't want to is because they've been so helpful. Like, why would I risk wanting to fall back into OCD? If there's not a reason, there's no harm that they're doing to me. So for me, I've just gotten more comfortable, I think, over the years of, yeah, I take medication and that's okay. Whereas I think in the beginning, I was more like, oh my gosh, I only want to take this for a short time. I really don't even want to try it. But then it was like, no, I feel so much better. No way am I risking going back to that.
Yeah, I find it so interesting, right? Like illness is an illness. And yeah. I know there's still so much stigma out there about mental illness, but I look at it this way. So if you have a diagnosis of like high blood pressure that you can't control right. on your own through whatever, or diabetes or whatever it is, like you would go, oh no, I'm not going to take my medication just so easily because yeah. it helps your body for whatever reason needs it. And I just wish there wasn't so much stigma about mental health illness. And at that, yeah. taking the medication, like it's some weakness or something's wrong with you, or it's a crutch or the fear. I don't know.
Yes, totally. And I think that's where the ableist component comes in, is because there tends to be this like morality attached to taking medication, especially for mental health. So if we didn't view it as a societally, if we didn't view it as like a weakness or a bad thing, I think more people would be open to taking it. But because there's this good versus bad narrative around it, it's a lot more stigmatized.
I very much appreciate anyone who comes on here and is self-disclosing and shares their story, because I think that is how we help the stigma decrease, hopefully. Yeah. The more open we can be, then I think that just over time, the discussion can be had like more. And, you know, to your points, like you're a professional and you're still taking the medication, it completely helped you. And I think that can help your patients to go, oh, wait a minute, there's somebody that I can look to and say it helped them, and maybe it can right. help me too. So if anyone's listening, here's somebody else that like got help, that recovered, that's doing well, that's helping other people, right? Mm-hmm. That's like a lot of the point why I do this podcast too, is to just have more and more stories about how people can overcome their struggles, especially yes. if at one point maybe you feel like Allison did, right? Like you can get to where she's at, which is amazing.
Yeah, thank you. And I agree so much. Like hearing other people's experiences for both eating disorders and OCD was a huge part of my own recovery. Like you learn so much from just listening to other people's stories. You feel way less alone and more hope that that change is possible too.
So question, if people want to find you, work with you, get information about you, how can they do that?
Yeah, so you can find my therapy practice website at www.eatingdisorderocdtherapy.com. And then you can find me on Instagram at bodyjustice.therapist. And you can reach out to me there and I'll be happy to connect.
Allison, thank you. Any last final words before we end?
No, that was wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for sharing everything and all this great information. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening today. Behind the Bite podcast is created by me, Dr. Christina Castanini, as part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network, and produced by The Tweaky Tales. I love hearing from my listeners. So if you like the show, please rate and subscribe to it on whatever platform you're on. And for anyone who wants to understand their relationship with food better, or who might be wondering if they have an eating disorder, I have a free 9-week e-course at my website. Just go to www.behindthebitepodcast.com to get your free e-course today. Please note, this podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, clinical, or other professional information. If you want or need a professional, you should find one to work with who can address your individual needs and situation. Thank you.